Welcome everyone to episode 415 of the NBA podcast. I'm Morten Jensen, and today we'll be discussing the winners and losers of the NBA trade deadline. Before we get underway, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. We're on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, and leave some five-star reviews. We're being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And we're recording our show today on Locker Room, the only live audio social network for sports fans. Listen to our show on Locker Room before it hits your iTunes feed, engage with us in real time, or start your own room to react to the draft, trade news, and more. Take the mic and download Locker Room in the Apple App Store. Joining me today, as always, I can say now, is Keith Smith of Yahoo Sports. Keith, how are you? I have to imagine that the trade deadline was a busy one for you because you were on the Locker Room platform for a full 4 hours. How did that go?
Hey, it went great. Yeah, we had a blast. It was 4 hours. We started at noon and we went up to the deadline, and then through the 3 to 4 o'clock hours, all the final deals trickled in, and we got deal details. There was but I want to say there's three deals that went in at the buzzer, or deal terms were tweaked from prior reports and those things. So yeah, I had an absolute blast here on Locker Room. Loved it. Anybody who's listening here today or listens to the podcast version, if you joined, thank you. Special thanks to the 27 people who hung in for the entirety of the 4 hours. That was absolutely amazing. So we had a great time.
Wow, that is impressive. 27 people sticking for four full hours. You know what, that's dedication. I love it. I absolutely love that.
Absolutely. Yep, no doubt. Yeah, I was completely blown away when we went through and started counting people up. It was like, holy cow, you guys have been here the whole time. It was really great, man. It was fantastic. Really, fun. Day overall. Getting into the everything trade deadline wise, reacting to all of it and all that stuff.
Nice. I wish I could have joined, but I was busy doing my own live thing. I was on YouTube for 3 hours, and it was just so much fun. Got a lot of questions. And, you and I talked about this the last time, Keith. It's sort of like Christmas trade deadline. Like, the trade deadline day and draft day are like two of the best days to be a part of NBA Twitter and be part of like the NBA atmosphere. I think it's just, I don't know what it is about it. It's just magical.
Yeah, it really is. I say this about too many days on the NBA calendar, but I really have four that are like my favorite times of the year. I love trade deadline day. I love the NBA draft day. I love the first day of free agency.
Oh yeah,
that's and cool. Then of course opening night, like real opening night I like that night when just the. There's a couple games, but when we get that real opening night and everybody plays, just usually this past year it didn't feel quite as special because it felt like we took a month off and got right back at it. But when we've had months away and then it's finally time for basketball again, I absolutely love it. So yeah, I can confidently say I can have many favorites. It's like all your children are your favorites. So this is one of my favorite days of the year.
Yeah. I'll personally add in Christmas Day games as well, because for me, that's just a full day of games, and where the vast majority of them comes at a reasonable hour for me. Which also, I think also Martin Luther King Day, right? That's when the league has really early games. Yeah. There are definitely some of those days sprinkled out across the season where I just, basically tell friends and family, no, you're going to leave me alone for the entire evening. I don't want any DMs. I don't want any phone calls. I don't want nothing. Just let me watch hoops at a reasonable hour.
See, now, at least for you on Christmas, you're through, like, the festivities, right? Because you're already through, all the get up and go crazy in the morning. I know you've got young ones, too.
We don't even do that.
All that stuff.
No, we do it in the evening. We do it on the 24th.
Oh, there you go. So even better. See, for us, like, our daughter is getting older, so we're not getting up at 5 or 6 in the morning to, go nuts anymore. Now we're getting into the, let's drag it out, take a little bit longer. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, look, by noon, I'm on the couch in the other room or in the recliner in the office watching games. So let's get this Christmas show on the road.
Yeah. Now, this is where I really prefer just having everything done on the 24th, because then people are leaving. They go back home at that day. So the 25th is all mine, baby. No family whatsoever. Yeah, right? And the kids
and
are
the
playing with
their
toys.
The NBA is always off on Christmas Eve. Right? Yeah. The NBA never plays. So, yeah, maybe you'll talk to the family into that. You might have just turned me on to something.
Right, exactly. And plus, then you know, your daughter will get her presents earlier.
Yeah, there it is. Yeah, there it play is. With them in the morning when she wakes
right.
up.
All right, Keith. Well, we have to get into the winners and losers. Unfortunately, we can't just sit here and talk about families and personal matters, even though that would have been great. We have a job to do here. And first and foremost, so did the Nuggets. They had a job to do, and I think they kind of succeeded because they got Aaron Gordon. I know he was rumored. You know that as well. He was rumored very, very aggressively to the Boston Celtics. That didn't materialize. Instead, he goes to Denver, where he is going to be matched up alongside Nikola Jokic, Jamal Murray, and Michael Porter Jr. Keith, just from an offensive perspective, I'm already just getting hyped. I mean, where are you on that scale? What do you think he gives Denver in terms of both offensive input, defensive versatility? Like, break it down for us.
Yeah, this is a addition that, in a way, replaces what they haven't had this year after losing Jeremy Grant. He's an athletic, big forward who can do a lot of different things. What they haven't had since Jeremy Grant left for the Pistons in free agency is that guy who can guard those big wings. So LeBron James, Kawhi Leonard, those kind of guys. I don't want to go as far as, you know, a couple people are like, yeah, but nobody stops those guys. No, but you want to make them work, right? You don't want it to be easy on them. Right. And I think that's what Gordon gives you, is a guy you can put on them. He actually did a nice job on Kawhi Leonard in the playoffs a couple years ago when the Magic and Raptors met in the first round, the year Toronto won the title. He did an okay job on Leonard. He's always done all right against LeBron. So that's what he gives him on the defensive end. On the offensive end, what I get excited about is Jokic, Gordon, and then shooters at the other three spots spaced around them. Yeah. You can just envision those plays where Jokic is kind of working right around the foul line. He does that kind of little Jokic spin move turn where you're not sure, is he going to shoot? Is he going to kick? And here comes Gordon flying in on the baseline cut, and it's a lob to the rim and, you know, dunks and everything else. Or if they drop off to take that away, Gordon stays put in the corner and he gets dimed up. He shot it quite well. So, yeah, I think they did really, really good with Aaron Gordon. And I think the JaVale McGee pickup for essentially nothing was also, you know, a nice move for them as well. I like Isaiah Hartenstein, and I think, you know, eventually he may be a player. But right. Denver's not in a position where they need projects, right? You need to move forward. And that's the other thing I'll say on the Gordon trade is they did it without giving up a single rotation player. I know Gary Harris is a rotation player in a normal time, but he's been hurt all year. So he hasn't really been a part of things for Denver this year. RJ Hampton, really nice player. I think the Magic did well to get him. I know we're going to talk about Orlando later, but he was not going to be part of Denver's playoff rotation. So you added Aaron Gordon for a protected first-round pick and a couple guys who, you know, question marks for at least this season. Denver's right there now in the Western Conference, you know, with everybody else. That kind of group of five or six, depending on how you feel about Portland, Denver's right in the middle of that group. And I think you could almost give all those teams even odds on who's going to come out.
One of the things I really like about this acquisition is that now you have three big players in Jokic, Gordon, and Porter, all of whom can actually initiate pick and rolls both as a ball handler and a screener. How insane is that? There's no comparison that I can think of where that has been true before, where you had three guys of that size who's able to do both. If that lineup exists or has existed, I'm unfamiliar with what it was. I think we're going to see something completely new here. And for Gordon, you know, he was so excited. Did you see when they asked him about going to Denver? And he just spoke up all the possibilities of him being a slasher and a cutter and doing all these things that Jokic could help facilitate. I don't know, man. I have a feeling this is going to just explode in terms of efficiency, and I think it's going to be a tremendous fit.
Yeah, and I think he's a very easy to fit in guy, too. If I can say right. that two more, I think because what with Gordon is he's not a. If you go and acquire a guy who's a dominant ball handler, a guy who needs possession a lot, that can be hard, right? Because then you really got to kind of tweak a lot of things in your offense. You're basically going to tell Aaron Gordon, here's what I need you to do, and he's going to slot in there, and he's just going to kind of play. It'll take him a little while to get their sets down and their defensive coverages and those kind of things, but once he picks that up, it's going to be relatively easy. This is not a guy you're building your offense around, and I've long maintained Aaron Gordon, when he slots in as a team's third, fourth, fifth best player, you're going to see a different Aaron Gordon. The numbers may be lesser, but you're going to like him a lot more as a player. And I think that's what you're going to see now with that. I just hope they don't overuse him as a pick and roll ball handler guy, because it can get a little bit messy there. But the nice right. thing is now, yeah, you have these lineups where it's swing and attack off the bounce. You can play five guys who can do that. And I don't. And to your point, I don't think there's another team in the league, except maybe the Lakers when they go small with AD at the five, that can pull that off credibly. So Denver's offense, which was already good, is gonna kind of maybe go to another level now.
Yeah, and I'm also not concerned about the fit between Gordon and Porter either. I think they are very interchangeable. I understand that some people are looking at that going, well, who plays the four? Who plays the three? I don't think it right. Like we talked about last time, you essentially have a 7-footer playing point guard. Like it positions are meaningless for this Nuggets team. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah. You've got now a bunch of guys who become very interchangeable, and that's something that they were a little more. Jokic is so unique, but outside of him, they were a little more. They weren't as versatile as I think you kind of like. And I know a couple of people said without Harris, they're really light at the two. And I think what people are missing there is Jamal Murray is almost the backup two guard, in addition to kind of being the de facto point guard,
right?
Because they play Morris and Campazzo so much that you just move Murray off the ball alongside those guys on the nights when Barton doesn't have it, or even just when Barton sits, that's where Murray goes to. And then you could even play without a traditional point guard. They rarely do, but you could get away with that if you needed to because you have Jokic. So that gives you just so many lineup possibilities. Michael Malone has to be looking at this thing and just kind of drooling at all the things he can design and draw up now.
Yeah. No, totally agree. They have so many players who can pass the basketball now as well. So, nothing is safe. If you catch my drift, there are certain guys, when they get the ball, they ain't giving it up. It's going to be a shot. But they just have so many guys where you have to play them, both for their offensive capabilities, but also for the pass, which I think is just going to add so many layers to their offensive versatility. So I definitely have the Nuggets as a winner. And I can see that you do, too, because you have an article up on Yahoo, basically detailing who the winners and losers are, and you actually had the Nuggets at the very first mention of that article. So without spoiling too much, I can see that you're in agreement. I want to go to a different team that I also consider a winner, and I think you agree with that as well. The Chicago Bulls, they were kind of stagnant, I think it's fair to say. They weren't getting the production out of Wendell Carter Jr. as they thought they would. They also traded for Otto Porter years ago. He only played 54 games for him overall during his Bulls career. They moved off of both, plus two protected first-rounders this year and in 2023. And they got back Nikola Vucevic, the one guy we actually thought the Magic would hang on to for a little while longer. They didn't. Now he's a Chicago Bulls. He's going to have his debut tonight against the Spurs. Keith, obviously, you have covered the Magic for a long while now. You're in Orlando. Give us the full lowdown here on that move. What does Nikola Vucevic give the Chicago Bulls?
Yeah, Vooch is a very good, balanced offensive player. You can throw it into him in the post and trust he's going to score, or he'll make a good pass out of there. You can play pick and pop with him. He's a pretty good roll man because he's got fantastic hands, whether that be to catch and finish or catch and find a pass. When you have a big who can catch and find guys on the short roll, that gives you a lot of optionality. And it's still a relatively rare skill set. He's not Jokic. Let's not go crazy, right, as a passer, because nobody is. But Vooch is a guy you can put at the high post and you can run some stuff through. And I think you're going to see them incorporate a lot of dribble handoff stuff with Zach LaVine. Those two will probably become pretty good pick and roll partners. He's not a super athletic finisher. At the rim, he's never going to be the guy that you're going to be throwing lobs to and the like. But I think instead of tossing lobs up to guys that maybe work, one out of every five times, the Bulls will settle for throwing a nice pass to a guy, and it'll work, three out of five times on certain nights and those kind of things. So yeah, he's going to give you that. Defensively, Vooch has gotten a bad rap because he's not a big time shot blocker. He's not, he's not this guy who's there, but you ask him to play positional defense, that's fine. And my guess is they're going to stick with Thad Young in the starting lineup. They'll probably move Lauri Markkanen to the bench now, because you can't play Vooch and Markkanen together and build anything resembling a functional defense. It's just not going to work because neither one can handle their own on the perimeter. But you play Young next to him, Patrick Williams, Zach LaVine, whatever guards they go with, whether it be Satoransky, White, Valentine, Archie Diakno, whoever it is, in that grouping, maybe Garrett Temple when he gets back, you're going to build a pretty good defense. It's not going to be great, but you could get to, from here on out, you could play as a, middle of the pack defense, and that's probably all you need to really make a nice push through the play-in and maybe into the playoffs. So yeah, in Vooch, he's a great rebounder too, which has become the forgotten part of defense, right? I say this all the time. Coaches will tell you defense doesn't end until you have the ball. And so what you want is you need guys who can clean the glass. And Vooch does that. And he's not a, it's weird that Andre Drummond has almost become this weird, fantastic individual rebounder, while his teams are never good defensive rebounding teams. Mm-hmm. Vooch has been a good defensive rebounder, while the Magic have been a pretty good defensive rebounding team with him. He'll go out, he'll block out, he'll do all the kind of the little things you need. And then the one thing offensively that he doesn't do, he doesn't get to the line at all for a big guy. So that's going to just be, that may be something that frustrates Bulls fans at times with that. But overall, they have an absolutely fantastic new offensive weapon and a better passable defender than I think he gets credit for.
And also a big part of this, I think it's fair to say, was also satisfying Zach LaVine. He's a free agent after next season. So showing LaVine that they're serious about competing, they're serious about winning, I think goes a very, very long way in making LaVine attracted to the idea of remaining in Chicago long term. I think if they go out of their way to give him a competitive team around him, they should be in the driver's seat come 22.
What was the question?
The Zach LaVine when he's sure up. That's
22.
Yeah,
yep. 22. Yeah, he's got one more year.
Exactly, yeah. Right. So I have to assume that he's in the driver's seat. The Bulls are in the driver's seat for retaining him just because they give him enough weapons. And Vooch is certainly a weapon. And they were also in the hunt for Lonzo Ball. Apparently, they're still not out of that hunt. It's just going to go from trade deadline into restricted free agency instead. We'll see what kind of cap flexibility they even have, because Lauri Markkanen, they failed to trade him. I have to assume they were dangling him to New Orleans for Lonzo Ball in some sort of capacity. So there's a situation they also need to figure out. But they did get Troy Brown Jr. in. And Keith, allow me to dust my shoulders off just a little bit, because I wrote a piece for Forbes detailing that I think it was time for Troy Brown to get out of Washington. And I specifically mentioned the Chicago Bulls and really went deep on that. And lo and behold, they actually moved out pieces to get him. He's still young. There's a lot of unanswered questions about him. He didn't have a good year this year in Washington, but he was also buried on the bench, which doesn't really give you a whole lot of chances to excel. But what does he give the Bulls in an optimized role here?
Yeah, I really kind of liked the idea of Troy Brown Jr. when I thought John Wall was coming back to the Wizards, because I thought they might play a little up-tempo. I envisioned him kind of filling the lane, the opposite wing from Bradley Beal, in a team that got up and down the floor. And then they went to Westbrook, and for all that Westbrook is, you know, an explosive guy, even at his, you know, advanced age, he doesn't play, he's never played overly fast. You know, so it's always been more of an attack out of the half court kind of deal. So Brown, I think there's just a ton of untapped potential there. I have this weakness more for big guards. I just always think they're gonna figure it out, especially if they can do some stuff. So, you know, and I probably should get off that because a lot of them don't. But yeah, I mean, for the Bulls, you kind of take a little bit of a flyer here on him, right? You get to look at him the rest of this year. Let's say he looks great. Maybe you approach an extension conversation with him. If he doesn't, you've got him under contract for next year.
Yep.
My assumption is he'll slot in and probably take some of the minutes that Denzel Valentine gets now. And I'm not a super big on Valentine, which is weird because I have an affinity for Michigan State players in the NBA, which I don't understand because I have no attachment to Michigan State. I just assume they're all going to be good. Somewhere I still probably have Brandon Dawson stock, if you remember him, and he washed out the league pretty quickly, which is also why I'm still in on Gary Harris. But yeah, so that's my guess, is he takes some of those minutes. Probably ultimately when it comes down to it, the wing who's probably going to play the most for this team, assuming they continue to be good in that mix, right? Patrick Williams is clearly the one who will play the most, but the next one will probably be Garrett Temple, is my guess, because he was actually playing pretty well for them so before he got injured. So I think that's what Brown can bring them. But yeah, and then the other guy that they got in that trade, Daniel Theis, is going to come in and I assume now be the backup center for Vucevic for the rest of the year once the dust settles there. And now you'll kind of have a four-man front court of Vuce, Thaddeus Young, Daniel Theis, and Lauri Markkanen, and that's pretty good. If you're the Bulls, you got to be feeling pretty good that Theis and Markkanen, if those are your backup bigs, with Al-Farouq Aminu kind of in the fifth spot there, if somebody needs to be out for any reason, I think you feel pretty good about that depth, at least for the rest of this season. Markkanen's time's clearly coming to an end in Chicago. Yeah. I think Theis will also be priced out. But maybe what might excite Bulls fans the most out of this is it's very likely you'll never see Cristiano Felicio play another minute for this team.
I think that just that alone is a victory for Bulls fans. Now, I have a hot take here, and I kind of want to hear your thoughts on it. I think Daniel Theis is more influential a basketball player than Lauri Markkanen is. I think Markkanen is more talented just in terms of like raw skill set, but I think in terms of being more competitive, being able to actually bring wins to the table, being more of an impactful player, Daniel Theis is, in that regard, better than Lauri Markkanen. Am I crazy?
No, not at all. Daniel Theis is a far better defender than Markkanen is. Theis can hold his own on switches on the perimeter. He was a big key to Boston's switch everything defense the last couple of years, because that only works if you have a big that can execute it. Otherwise, they're just going to put the big in the pick and roll every time, cause a switch, and make a mess of it. So he can do that. He's a great help side defender as far as being a shot blocker. He's got fantastic timing. He's a really good finisher around the rim, and he can step out. And I'm not looking it up because I'm not that interested to look it up, but it feels like he's about as good a shooter from the outside as Markkanen has been. The volume is just a lot lower for Theis. As a backup five for the rest of this year, you could not ask for probably a better one than Daniel Theis in the league. And I think that's going to be big for the Bulls. It would not surprise me if by the time we get to whether the Bulls are in the play-in or the playoffs, if Markkanen is the fifth guy and is really just kind of out of the mix entirely. It wouldn't surprise me at all. I think his the writing's on the wall for his future in Chicago now that they have Vooch, because they can't play together. I think he's elsewhere. Now that it didn't happen at the deadline, my dream is a double restricted free agent sign and trade of him for Lonzo Ball, because that just would be I feel like Markkanen and Zion could be really fun together. How good your defense is ever going to be? You better have really good defenders 1 through 3. But Markkanen seems like one of those guys to me where I think what's going to end up happening with him is wherever he goes next, probably not going to be a very good team. We're going to see him put up some pretty good numbers. And then what will happen is he'll hit that kind of mid-career point where he'll then go to a third team. And it will all of a sudden it'll be, hey, as a backup stretch five spot starter guy who can play the four and the five a little bit, if he's your fifth, sixth, seventh best player, he starts to look really good. But I think we're going to go through some pain, to get to that point, as we've already seen now. And then his health track record hasn't been very good either. So yeah, I love Tice. I love Brown. Javonte Green. Bulls fans are going to love this guy when he gets in there, because all he does is play at 100 miles per hour. He will go up with the ball in his hands on plays where you think, what is this guy doing? And then next thing you know, he's dunking on someone. Yeah. I'm going to encourage everybody right now, more. I don't know if you've done this either. Go to Twitter and search for Javonte Green and then look at the pinned tweet on his timeline. He does a between the legs dunk from standstill under the basket. He picks the ball up off the floor, puts it between his legs and dunks it. It is one of the most athletic things I've ever seen. And this guy is, he came into Summer League a couple years ago and just came in and dunked all over everybody, earned a spot with Boston. And he's not going to have a huge role, but he's somebody, when Billy Donovan needs to change the energy of a game, he'll put him in there and people will be like, holy crap, this guy's an athlete. So, yeah, I love what the Bulls did. I thought this was good because I think now you're relevant. And they didn't. While they gave up the draft picks, that's an investment for sure. They didn't screw up their cap sheet too much. Next year, they're not going to have cap space. They weren't going to anyway. Or a real meaningful amount. They might add somewhere between 15 and 20 million. But 22, 23, the only deals probably on the books at that time are Vooch, Kobe White, and Patrick Williams. And now, so you're set up pretty good if you re-sign Zach LaVine, you're set up with a lot of flexibility in a summer where it looks like you might be, free agent chasing in either 2022 or 2023 if they can keep things relatively clean.
I was actually a little bit skeptical when the trade first came out because at that point we didn't know about the protections. And things can go wrong. Like I mentioned on the live stream as well, the Bulls were second behind the Cleveland Cavaliers over the past few years in total games missed. Like they missed something along the lines of 600 games due to injury. So I was a little bit skeptical about like maybe giving up unprotected first round draft picks because it's the Bulls. Anything could happen just because of the history. So what if Zach LaVine and Nikola Vucevic, went down or something? Then could you just imagine that they won the lottery and would have to give up Cade Cunningham to Orlando? So when I saw that they had top four protected both of those picks, both in 2021 and 2023, that instantaneously made me love the deal for the Bulls far, far more than I did initially, especially because the 2023 could be the double draft. I mean, we don't really know when that is going to be applied, but maybe you're more clued into this than I am, but I'm fairly certain it hasn't been ruled out that it could be 2023, correct?
It hasn't been ruled out. It's really a mess right now with the everything that happened, in the past year with the pandemic kind of throwing everything off. One thing that it's funny, right? The Players Association fights for, all sorts of stuff. And one of the things that we always hear is, they must want these kids to be able to get in, right? That's the thing, right? If, people get super extreme, but if you can go off to war, you should be able to join the NBA right away and all this stuff, right? Let's not get crazy. The two are pretty different things. But the Players Association also protects their veterans. So they don't have a huge desire to introduce, you know, 10 more kids right out of high school that are taking the jobs of veterans at the end of NBA benches, because everybody's right. Like, well, we'll just, that's where we'll stash all our projects. The G League Ignite team, that changed the math maybe a little bit on that. Is that a path forward now that they're actually paying real money there with that? So we'll see. It's going to happen. I think we can feel pretty confident on that. I would not be surprised, though, if when we ultimately see that rule change and kids can come in straight from high school again, if we see something tweaked with all 30 teams by then have their own G League affiliate,
right.
And it's, you know, you got to spend the first year with the affiliate or something like that, so much time or something. I think we're going to see some adjustments made there. But, yeah, it's going to come. We just don't know when that comes. But to your point of protecting that pick, yeah, because I saw a lot of people like, well, what difference does it make? There's no way they're ever going to finish in the lottery now. Let's not go crazy. Right. I mean, they've still got to pass an awful lot of teams to get into one of the top six spots. I'm not sure that they're going to do that. I think Boston and Miami are still better. I think the Hawks are probably still better. If the Pacers could ever figure it out for more than a couple days at a time, I think they're probably still better. And then the other thing I'll say with the Bulls is, you know, not to rain on Bulls fans' parades, because they should be excited here, but is it might take a little bit because they made a lot of changes and there's no practice time. It's going to take a little while for this thing to get back in sync and for them to figure it out. But what I think is they might be one of those teams that they get into the play-in. I could see them, even if they're the 10th seed, winning their way into the play-in and in the playoffs. They're not going to beat Philly, Brooklyn, or Milwaukee, but it could be one of those things where they make it a little more uncomfortable. You know, maybe they, you know, win a game and then they're in a couple more games. Kind of what Orlando did the last couple of years in the playoffs. You know, and just make the opponent sweat a little bit in the first round. But yeah, but this was never really just solely about this year. This was more about, you know, what are we doing next year and in the years beyond. And I think they're set up quite well now.
So let's get into the Orlando Magic here, Keith, because
sure.
They took a sledgehammer to that roster. Absolutely. These guys had spent the trio of Vucevic, Gordon, and Evan Fournier had played together since 2014, and in a span of just a few hours, all of them were gone. And they are starting over from basically scratch. There's still Terrence Ross, to be fair. Terrence Ross is still there, and he's probably going to have the time of his life jacking up 20 shots per game right now. But they just pivoted so hard into a brand new direction. What are we looking at here for the Magic? This is they've gone in from the long haul here. This is going to be a long rebuilding process.
Yeah, absolutely. And now they what they did was they cleaned up their cap sheet significantly. They've got all sorts of flexibility now that they didn't have before. Their draft picks are really good. I think they did a nice job. A lot of people are like, man, but are we going to have a shot at Cade Cunningham? They're going to have a shot at Cade Cunningham because it's about to get real ugly. They're going to be a tough watch the rest of the year if you're looking for really good basketball. They are, as it stands right now, they're 2.5 games ahead of the Pistons. So they could, you know, definitely get down there. I don't know that they'll get to the Rockets, Timberwolves, but you're only going to be in that bottom four to have those kind of even odds. So right. They're probably going to be battling to you know, keep that level, right? The Wizards, they've fallen a good deal out of the play-in race. I could see the Wizards really turning an eye here towards, Brett Beal's got some back spasms, so he's not going to play tonight. And Russ's knee is acting up. He's going to be out for a week. And the next thing you know, the Wizards are knocking on the door of that top four. So it's going to be, you know, it's now the race to the bottom, like we're used to at this point, you know, post-trade deadline every year. Right. But so that's their own pick. Then they're going to have likely, let's call it a mid-first from the Bulls, right? So somewhere in that mid-first range, whether it be late lottery or, you know, if the Bulls get into the playoffs, somewhere it'll be in the, you know, I'm going to say 12 to
17.
17 range. Yeah, exactly. Yep, somewhere in that range. Then you have RJ Hampton, who they like quite a bit and they think can really play with Markelle Fultz and Jonathan Isaac. You've got Cole Anthony coming back. They got Wendell Carter, who I was told was kind of the key to the Bulls holding off a late run from the Celtics. The Bulls didn't believe the Celtics had anybody as good that they were willingly offering as Carter. Robert Williams might be make that a conversation here if he continues to play the way he did against the Bucks in his first start of the season, where he really kind of went bananas, with all sorts of great play. But you've got kind of all these young guys on your roster that you like if you're Orlando, right? You're feeling pretty good. Mo Bamba, we'll see. But you're protected now with Wendell Carter. You've got the either or, right? One of those two young guys probably pans out. Fultz, Isaac, Hampton. Maybe this is a great chance for Gary Harris to kind of rehab a little bit of his value, and maybe he's a trade piece for next season. Poor Terrence Ross is left. He's the last man left. Terrence Ross was one of the winners of the trade deadline because of his Twitter account. He was absolutely hilarious. So I highly encourage everybody to go take a look at that because he was absolutely phenomenal on trade deadline day with his tweets. And like I said, you got a clean cap sheet. The pick they got from the Nuggets, I was told they purposely liked that the Nuggets are giving them a pick in what could be the post-Jokic years. Not that anybody thinks Jokic is leaving Denver, but the idea there is if he ever did, if it was like, we're not going to go, that's when the Magic are going to get that pick, is after Jokic's contract runs out. So I really think they're in good shape. Jeff Weltman, the president of basketball operations, said, it's a great day to be a Magic fan. And I think what's interesting is when they came in, him and John Hammond, to run this team, they were, I don't want to say saddled with, guys, but it was, all right, we're building around a lot of guys we did not trade for, guys we did not draft, guys we did not pick. Now, basically almost all of those guys are gone. Terrence Ross is really the last one of that group that they didn't have because they also dealt Evan Fournier to Boston. So they're really in a position now where this is their chance to make over this roster in their image and do what they want to do. And to me, that's always exciting. I like when a team says, We're doing it our way now. We're not going to mess around. And the most important thing the Magic did, and Weltman said this, so I have no problem saying this, was we looked at ourselves and said, we could still make a run at the playoffs this year if we wanted to add pieces to what we have. But we looked at it and said, are we a championship team? And when the answer was no, we decided it was time to rebuild. And not enough teams have that kind of honesty, especially if they're in a position where we could make a playoff run. We could try to go get guys. Not enough teams, have that honesty to say, but is that what we want? They did that 2 years in a row. That was enough. Fans now are, I'm talking to a lot of Magic fans, they're more excited now. They're very hesitant to fully embrace this because rebuilding hasn't gone great for Orlando in the past, but they're more excited than they were, let's say 2-3 days ago before these trades happened because they it's just not, now it's, all right, we have a true direction. That direction, we don't know where it'll head, and that unknown is better than the direction of we're headed to the 7th or 8th seed every year.
Right. What's always a dead giveaway to me when a team has initiated like a rebuilding process? It's when nobody talks about the X's and O's. When the Bulls and the Nuggets, getting the guys in that they got, you're talking about, Nikola Vucevic with Zach LaVine means a lot of pick and rolls and pick and pops, Aaron Gordon free roaming. Nobody is talking about how Wendell Carter's short game is going to go. Nobody's talking about anything of that sort. It's just about future. You said it best, Keith. It's going to get ugly. You don't have to watch.
Now here's what I'm going to tell you more though. For me, as someone who lives here, I'm more interested in watching this team now for the rest of this season than I was before. It's going to be bad. It's going to be super duper ugly. But give me RJ Hampton for 30 minutes a night. Give me Wendell Carter Jr. for 30 minutes a night.
Yeah.
I'll watch that bad, then watch Vooch play 30 minutes, score 20, grab 10 rebounds and lose. I'd rather watch the other guys, and see what they can do and see what they can kind of develop. And sometimes for these young guys, Hampton's different, right? Because, he's only had a half a season in the NBA so far. But Carter, it was probably, I think, the Bulls felt comfortable with, it wasn't going to happen for him here in Chicago.
Agreed.
Right? It hadn't gotten there. So let's move on from him. In the Magic now, kind of like we talked about with Troy Brown, the Magic get to look at him the rest of this year. They'll have a much better sense of how they feel as he's going into contract extension negotiations before next year. If they don't feel good about that, they let him play it out and go to restricted free agency and go from there. But I think it's now, once they're all healthy and ready to go, Kem Birch will figure in there somewhere because Steve Clifford's not going to go full on in on, I'm just going to play garbage. He wants people to do what he will ask, which Kem Birch is that guy for him. A little surprised they didn't trade him as well at the deadline because I think they could have got a small asset in return. But it's mostly going to be Carter and Bamba and let's figure it out. And I think what's going to happen a lot there is it's going to be the unseen moments, those rare practice days and the like. And then the practice days next year and over the summer, when those two guys are going head to head all the time, that'll be where Orlando will really let it sort itself out. Maybe the answer becomes it's neither one of them, but if that's what it is, then you move on. There's a bunch of really good bigs coming in the next couple draft classes. Yep. But yeah, I mean, I can envision a team where it's Fultz, Hampton, Isaac, Carter. I would love it if it was somehow Cade Cunningham. If they could get there, all of a sudden Orlando becomes, whoa, that team's loaded with young talent. That's a lot of fun. And I want to throw my guy Chuma Okeke in there too.
Yeah.
Starting to really figure it out. Starting to put up some numbers. I think there's a chance he's going to be a real player in the NBA here. He's finally fully healthy and he's getting comfortable. And you're seeing why that guy was mentioned as a mid-lottery pick before he tore his ACL. You're starting to see his game round back into form. So yeah, I'm bullish on the Magic moving forward.
Chuma did some things last night that I did not anticipate was in his bag.
Yeah, he's good.
Yeah, he had the mid-range back down turnaround fadeaway that he stuck.
Yeah.
And then I think he cashed in on 4 threes, like just spotting up within the flow of the offense. Like that. Yeah,
it can score a little bit off the bounce.
Yeah, right. And like he did it with confidence too. It wasn't like one of those, young guys hesitating. Like he stepped into those bad boys and just took it. Like that's to me.
Yep.
You know how when you scout players and when you look at certain guys, one of the things I kind of look at is if a guy goes into shots with confidence or whether or not like they're overthinking. And I would always prefer a guy who basically compartmentalizes it to the point where he says, okay, it does. If I shoot the ball with confidence, you know what? I will live with whatever happens because I know I can play defense. I know I can do certain things. For guys who just comes in with that mindset of going, I'm going to take this. I'm not going to turn it down. I'm not going to think twice about it because look, for crying out loud, it's just a shot. It doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things.
Especially now.
Right.
Yeah. On this team. Yeah. Yeah, it really doesn't matter anymore on this team.
Right.
Yeah, man, I love Chuma Okeke. I've been super excited for him because he's had those moments this year where it's been like, ooh, there's something there.
Yeah.
I like he can put it on the floor for, 2-3 dribbles and make something happen. He's big. He's strong. I think as he learns how to play, he's going to get himself to the free throw line a little bit more. I couldn't be higher on him moving forward. I think there is a real chance he develops into something here. And if he can, there's another guy. And I did it too. I didn't mention him until I mentioned about four or five other young Magic players, including a guy who might not even end up on the team in Cade Cunningham before I got to Chuma. But I think he can play. I'm excited.
Well, I mean, I did something far worse. I actually posted a Magic video on my YouTube channel yesterday, over 17 minutes, and I completely forgot to even mention him. So I am definitely way more at fault than you are because he's worthy of a mention. He's one of those guys that they're banking on moving forward. And and for the Magic fans listening, I kind of want to give some Wendell Carter intel as well because he played under Jim Boylan for a year and a half. And I don't think if you've done that, and Carter is a guy who's a thinker. Like he is really, really intelligent. I think for him to be mishandled in the way that he was and overthinking his own determination or his own path, that was just such a bad cocktail. For him to get a clean slate elsewhere, I think mentally is going to be so refreshing for him. I think skills-wise, his talent and skills were never a problem. He can pass, he can shoot, he can defend, he can rebound at a high level. There are so many things that Wendell Carter Jr. can do that he just didn't do in Chicago for whatever reason. A lot of that is, in my opinion, on Jim Boylan and him just getting into Carter's head in a way that he never should have been allowed to. So I think Carter is going to bounce back big time for the Orlando Magic. And like you said, Keith, even if he doesn't, you know, you can still pivot away from him and do something else. Like, hell, maybe they get the second pick in the draft. That's Evan Mobley out of USC. So there would be a guy right there as well. Overall, I'm, like you, very, very high on the Magic. And so next up, Keith, is, in my opinion, and I think you would agree with that, even though he might not be the best fit, Norman Powell to the Portland Trailblazers is just such a tremendous talent injection.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand people are going, but why do they need him if they have, you know, CJ and they have Dame? He's not really a small forward. I get that. And there is also a curiosity that I need to ask you about here, because one of the reasons they moved off of Gary Trent, who went to Toronto in this deal, was presumably because they knew that he was going to get a significant chunk of money this season. That said, so is Norman Powell, because his $11.6 million player option, that is obviously going to be declined, and he'll be a free agent himself, unrestricted no less. So what was it that made them do this particular deal? Now, I agree that, or I am of the belief that Powell is better, but both of them, him and Trent, would have been free agents. So wouldn't it have made more sense to move Gary Trent for someone who was more on a long-term contract?
My guess is Portland's going to do what they can to retain Norman Powell, and they'll have his bird rights and the ability to do that. So that would be my guess, okay, is what they're looking at. I also think Norman Powell, because of he now has years of experience playing as the I'm doing air quotes that no one can see, small forward, alongside Fred VanVleet and Kyle Lowry, who are two small guards. Well, right. Guess what Portland has? Two small guards in Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum. Powell knows what he can do against alongside two small guards, and he's gotten good at defending guys that are bigger than him because he fights. He'll battle, use his athleticism. They also haven't had a player, and I know it's funny, he started his first game in Portland because Damian Lillard was out against, of all things, the Orlando Magic, who we just talked about. Yeah. But Powell, my assumption is, probably comes off the bench, and he instantly becomes their best bench scorer. Gary Trent Jr. is a better defender than Norman Powell is. Norman Powell, I think, is better at everything else than Gary Trent Jr. is. And I think the difference between them as the defenders is not enough to make up the difference that Powell is. Trent, we all fell in love with how well he played in the bubble for Portland. But I think there is a limited upside there, and how much are you going to pay a guy whose role really projects as a very good 3-and-D wing?
Yeah.
What is that worth in today's game? Is that $15 million? All right, if you're Portland, that's fine. But he's never going to start over McCollum. He's probably not going to start at the 3 over Derek Jones Jr. And 3-and-D guys off your bench, that's not what I necessarily want to pay for. Whereas Norman Powell, I think, becomes an upgraded version of Jordan Clarkson, where if I pay him $20 million, I feel really good about that. Because if either CJ or Dame is out, I just put him in the starting lineup and off we go. And I can play a ton of minutes now. I envision their closing lineup this year, and if they keep Powell beyond, some version of Nurkic, Covington, Powell, McCollum, and Lillard. That's tough. That's going to be really tough to stop if you're an opponent, because that's multiple guys who can attack off the dribble. You have more than enough shooting in that group. Defensively, it's not great, but it's still fine. It's going to be okay. And I just like that better than Gary Trent Jr. I think Toronto did fine in this trade. And I think Trent, oddly, might have a better future there than he might have had in Portland, because I think when you put him alongside Siakam, Ibaka, Ananobi, that's a defensive group that all of a sudden, ooh, that's a little scary. If those are the three, you know, wing-ish guys I got to go against, that's kind of tough. So I like it there. I like this one for both sides. I just like it a little bit better for Portland. And I'll say this again. Everybody wants to throw $20+ million at Victor Oladipo. You should be spending that money on Norman Powell in free agency anyway. He's a better player.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And also, one of the things that I was looking at with this trade that I think is interesting, like long term, Lillard has played a ton of minutes over the past couple of years. Like last year, he even led the league in minutes at 37.5 per game. Now, in today's league, that's a ton. Like that is so much. And especially for high volume guys who also take 20 plus shots, handle the ball to the extent that someone like he does. The acquisition of Norman Powell, functioning as the third guard, could essentially get Lillard down to maybe 32 minutes per game, CJ as well. And then lo and behold, what would be left for Powell? 32. They could have the 32 split. Which essentially makes them like a three-man starting group, even if one of them comes off the bench. I kind of like that idea because I think now is the time you begin to scale back Lillard's minutes just a bit. He's still got a lot of contract to go. I know that he's not super old. I think he's just 30. He's going to be 31 later this year. So he's still got years left on his prime. I'm not suggesting that he's going to be worse somehow. But I'm just saying this is probably around the time you begin to think of giving him a little less of a burden. Just scale those minutes back. And Powell, if they retain him, of course, could be a huge piece in that.
Yeah, that's it. And yeah, Dame and CJ both, right? You want to be able to start backing those guys down a little because you need them healthy when you get to the springtime in the playoffs. That's the reality. Portland's only winning if those two are really, really good. And they haven't had the ability to do that in a way where I think they feel as comfortable as they will with Powell. The last kind of two comments I'll make on this one is just the salary cap nerd in me. This is why they gave Rodney Hood the contract they gave him. When a lot of people are like, I don't understand that Rodney Hood deal. Well, that's why you got to wait for the full details to come out. Because when we see Rodney Hood's second year is fully non-guaranteed, this was a, hey, we're giving you $10 million because one, you went through some crap with injuries. We feel, you know, a little bad. We want to help you get back on your feet. And if you come back and you look awesome, great, we have a steal at $10 million. If not, you're a $10 million trade asset. Right. Unfortunately, that's where it's going with Rodney Hood. I think he might be done. You know, maybe he can get back next year with a full offseason rework himself and get back. But I mean, I think he's shooting like 38% overall. He's under 30% from three. It's been an ugly year. The other thing I'll say is, I don't love this as much for Portland if they just lose Norman Powell in the offseason. Because they don't know. I said this earlier. There's a group of five in the West that you can talk me into can win the conference out of Utah, Phoenix, the LA teams, and Denver. You might be able to put Portland in there. I think they probably need a little bit more help matchup-wise, go against an opponent that's injured or something like that. And Powell helps, you know, lift you there. I don't know that he lifts them past those five teams. So if you just let him walk in the offseason, that starts to become a little bit of a problem. You got to do what you can to retain him, but you were probably in that boat anyway with Gary Trent Jr., so now you're probably paying a little bit more money. But, I mean, this is, you know, even with Paul Allen, you know, gone, this is still a team that, you know, they have never hesitated from spending money on this group. Maybe that's starting to change, but if it isn't, they should be just fine.
So a question for you, Keith, because you are undoubtedly a much smarter guy when it comes to the salary cap than I am. Is it legal for Toronto to offer Norman Powell a contract this offseason after having traded him at the deadline?
They can, yeah, because he'll be a free agent. What you can't do is you can't get the guy back if you do one of those trade him and then waive him and then try to re-sign him. That is not allowed. But when the contract has legally expired, yeah, Toronto could in theory go make another run and add Norman Powell and try to bring him back. We've seen that on occasions where a guy's been traded, finishes out a year, his contract expires, and then he re-signs with his former team. We've seen that every once in a while. That's happened.
Right. The reason I bring it up is because the Raptors did not trade Kyle Lowry. So he is right now, in pretty simple terms, a $30 million expiring contract. I don't know their future salary situation entirely, because if they retain Kyle Lowry, that's obviously a different manner. He's got a huge cap hold. But let's say Kyle Lowry leaves them this summer. Let's say he goes elsewhere. Rodney Hood, like you said, non-guaranteed. Could the Raptors be looking at throwing Norman Powell a huge offer to get him back in the fold? We saw that a guy like Fred VanVleet was just heartbroken to lose his buddy. I mean, are we ruling it out? Even if it doesn't seem improbable, could it be in the cards?
Yeah, I wouldn't rule it out. I think it's something to look at. They're going to do something big this offseason because they're really going in to the offseason with Siakam, VanVleet, Anunoby, and then Trent's very small cap hold because he's a second-round restricted free agent guy, so he's got a tiny cap hold. So it wouldn't shock me at all if that was, if they did some kind of big move came out of Toronto and they, went and then, it was like, hey, we're going to bring Norman Powell back and we're going to re-sign Gary Trent. That would be, it'd be kind of funny if that's how that ultimately played out. But yeah, I mean, this is a good place, I think, to pivot to the Raptors.
Yeah.
I had them as one of my losers at the trade deadline just because they didn't get a Lowry deal done. And I understand the idea of not taking a bad deal. And I also understand that they weren't sending him just anywhere, right? It was really Philly, Miami, or the Lakers. Those were the only three teams because they were not going to, ship him off to, I'm pulling it out of thin air here, but to Charlotte. They were not going to do that to Kyle Lowry, right? They wanted to make sure they took care of him and sent him somewhere where he wanted to be, where he's going to have an opportunity. And that's cool. And that will make a difference in the end that they didn't treat him like a name, or a contract number. They treated him like a person and a human being, and they really took care of him. And that'll help them down the line. And that's just, Masai Ujiri being really smart and considerate and all those things that makes Masai Ujiri who he is.
Right.
So I think what you're looking at with this, though, is it still feels like a missed opportunity. Maybe they held out for a little bit too much. But when you made the other moves where they, straight dumped Terrence Davis and Matt Thomas, clearly they were opening up roster spots because there's no reason for a team that's on the outside of the play-in picture looking in and has been playing terrible to be opening roster spots for buyout season because they're not probably getting anybody anyway. That was clearly being done in anticipation of, all right, we're going to get a Lowry deal done here. So that's just, for me, that's, that's a little tough. And like I said, I like Norman Powell, a little bit better than Trent. It's not that they, massively lost the deadline or anything like that, but if I had to put them on one side of the other, that's where I would put them.
Yeah, because otherwise, I'm looking around the league. I'm not seeing, a bunch of losers when you really look at it. I mean, yeah, you could argue that certain teams didn't get as much out of guys that you maybe think. But like in years prior, we've always had one team that completely screwed the pooch where we just went, oh, yeah, clear loser. I don't think there was that team there in that sense this year. But you brought up the Houston Rockets in your article as one of the losers. So let's get into that. What happened here? What makes you think that they are on the losing side of things?
Yeah, so I'm putting this together with the James Harden trade because there's no other way to look at it.
Right.
You can't evaluate this one solely on its own. So as I put this together with the James Harden trade, you essentially traded James Harden now for just draft picks. And that's not enough. You can't have just draft picks coming in. I know they've got all of them. They got all the Nets draft picks. And, maybe the Nets don't win a championship in the next year or two. And they break up and they end up a really bad team on the backside of that. And, you know, Houston ends up in the position where Boston was, right, where they've got, you know, the Nets picks and they can start, you know, building through the draft. But that's not your absolute best hope going forward from one of, even if you don't like James Harden, top five, top seven players in the game, you know, maybe even better than that. You know, clearly this is a guy who should be an MVP consideration again this year, even despite the nonsense from the first part with the Rockets. But yeah, it's they didn't keep Caris LeVert and went and got Victor Oladipo. I kind of get why they did it at the time, because the hope was, all right, we'll bring in Oladipo, we have John Wall, we got Christian Wood, we've got these other role players, we're going to make a playoff run. And they were 11-10 before the 20-game losing streak, you know, really caused their whole season to go off the rails. But now you traded Oladipo for Avery Bradley, Kelly Olynyk, and a pick swap. And I don't want to hear about your pick swap, because it's never going to matter. There's no way in hell the Rockets are going to be better than the Heat. Right. In 2022. It's just not happening. So Bradley and Olynyk, those guys have no future in Houston. That's not, even if they don't buy those guys out, which quite frankly, they probably should save a little bit of money if you can. Those guys don't have a lot of value. They're not sign and trade candidates. Yeah. So essentially you gave up James Harden for draft picks now. That's not enough. That's not enough of a return. And I can't get behind that. This was a completely mismanaged situation from the time they made the Harden trade. And now they, and then you kind of doubled down on it, made it even worse by trading Oladipo for essentially nothing. I think this was a major failure for the Rockets from the time of the Harden trade all the way through the trade deadline.
Well, there you have it, folks. The winners and the losers of the NBA trade deadline 2021. That's a good place to wrap up. Thanks to everyone for listening today. As a reminder, you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. We're also on iTunes or wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, and leave some 5-star reviews. We're being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And thanks for listening to our live show on Locker Room. If you liked our show, please be sure to start your own room and engage with other fans on the app. Download the Locker Room app in the Apple App Store to be part of our podcast. Until next time, I'm Morten Jensen, and I was joined by Keith Smith. And Keith, look, first and foremost, great job just before the trade deadline as well, covering every basis. I know you've been super busy, also doing a lot of media appearances. Put your feet up and take a breather. You've earned it.
Yeah, we're in the middle of a soccer-filled weekend with our daughter, but we got off to a good start. 7-0 win this morning for her team, so we're
nice.
We're psyched. So yeah, it was a good start to the day today, and we'll get back at it a little bit later and then into tomorrow and all that. But yeah, man, trade deadline's behind us, and now for a change we can actually focus on basketball, and actual games, which is always fun too, and the playoffs right around the corner. The other best time of the year.
They actually play games? I didn't know.
Yeah, weird. Yeah, it's not just salary cap numbers and trade machines.
Who knew? Okay, Keith, but you know what? I look forward to speaking to you again, so I'll catch you later.
Sounds good, Mort. Thank you.